Okay, we're beginning here at the beginning of Masechet Beitzah. Before we start, just a small introduction to Masechet Beitzah, which is known sometimes by the Rishonim and mentioned in the Gemara as Masechet Yom Tov, the Masechta that deals with Yom Tov. Now, despite the fact that we have other Masechtot like Masechet Pesachim, Masechet Sukkah, those Masechtot deal with the mitzvot of Yom Tov. Masechet Beitzah is more involved with Yom Tov qua Yom Tov, not the mitzvot that are done on Yom Tov, but Yom Tov itself. What's the nature of Yom Tov? And in that regard, the Masechta has two focuses. One is Yom Tov, and it also has a secondary focus, that of Mukse. So we'll speak about each of these items in the introduction, and then we'll begin with the Mishnah. In terms of Yom Tov, the Yom Tov, we have to understand what the nature or the character of Yom Tov is. The Ramban on Parshat Emor, in his Perush al Torah, mentions the possibility that if Yom Tov were to fall out on Shabbat, there would be a possibility that you could have Ochel Nefesh on that Shabbat. So we'd have to understand the nature of that. What does that mean, that you could possibly have Heter Ochel Nefesh on Shabbat just because Yom Tov fell out on Shabbat? Now that is the key element or the key difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov. The Mishnah in Megillah tells us this, or summarizes it, is and says, "Ein ben Shabbat de Yom Tov, ela ochel nefesh bilvad." The key difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov is ochel nefesh, the ability to prepare food, the ability to do any malacha that's associated with the eating of food, preparation of food on Yom Tov does not have any restrictions on Yom Tov, whereas on Shabbat there is such a restriction. Question is, what is that relationship between Shabbat and Yom Tov? And how does one differ from the other? Today's daf, Bet Amud Bet, we'll see that Rashi says about Yom Tov Ikrei Shabbat. That Yom Tov is called Shabbat, found in Masechet Pesachim, Mem Vav, in Shvot, Aftet Vav. Rashi mentions a number of times that Yom Tov Ikrei Shabbat, the Rambam, when he formulates Kiddush with regards to Yom Tov, he says, Chayev the Kadesh be Yom Tov, just like you do on Shabbat, Sheshnehem Shabbatot, because they're both called Shabbatot. The truth is, if you look at Shabbat, Shabbat really is an independent entity until you reach Parshat Emor. In terms of Parshat Emor, it's the first time Shabbat appears in the context of the Yamim Tovim. Till that point in time, Shabbat is an independent entity. All of a sudden, Parshat Emor, Shabbat is now amongst the Mikra Ekodesh. It's the first time that we find that Shabbat is also known as a Mikra Kodesh. In that regard, we have Shabbat appearing really in two manifestations. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal mentions in Shirim Lezech Avi Umori that Shabbat really has two aspects to it. There is Shabbat Breshit, the Shabbat that we're familiar with. The reason that we are told in the Torah that we have Shabbat is because of Zecher L'Maseh Breshit, the fact that it's connected to the creation. Hashem rested on the seventh day, so too we rest on the seventh day. We also know that the Torah mentions another aspect, or a secondary aspect of Shabbat, which is also Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim. So that it's also in memory of Mitzrayim. And in that aspect, or the Chiddush that Rav Soloveitchik wanted to suggest, is that Shabbat has two aspects to it. It has an aspect of Shabbat Breshit, but also has an aspect of Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, or Mikra Kodesh. And that aspect is what's emphasized in Parshat Emor, that Mikra Kodesh, Shabbat also, just like the Moadim, just like the Yamim Tovim, has an aspect of Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim. And we saw that in the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim that suggests that one is not Yotze Kiddush on Shabbat unless they mention Yetziat Mitzrayim. It's not enough to mention Maaseh Breshit. One also has to add the aspect of Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim. In terms of the Isser Melacha on Shabbat, now we could reverse the tables and say we understand why on Yom Tov you have a Heter Ochel Nefesh, but why on Shabbat is there no Heter Ochel Nefesh? You could argue that it's just the stringency of Shabbat, the stringency of the Melachot, and that is why we do not have a Heter Ochel Nefesh on Shabbat. It's just more Chamor. In that case, the Hava Min of the Ramban makes no sense in Parshat Emor that you could possibly have Ochel Nefesh be Mutar on Shabbat. The other possibility, which is raised by the Netziv and the Shagas Aryeh, is that somehow the Ochel Nefesh is connected to the Simcha of Yom Tov. And because of the Simcha of Yom Tov, that's what generates the Ochel Nefesh on Yom Tov. That aspect is not there on Shabbat. Shabbat differs from Yom Tov in that Yom Tov has a din of Simcha, which we'll see in this Masechta, whereas the din of Shabbat is simply oneg and not simcha. If that's the case, we can understand the difference between Yom Tov and Shabbat. Yom Tov that has simcha has a heter ochel nefesh. Shabbat, which only has a din of oneg, doesn't have a heter ochel nefesh. But then when the two coincide, you can understand the possibility that since there's a chi of simcha, there's a possibility of having ochel nefesh on Shabbat. Obviously, the maskana, that's not the case. But the fact that it's even entertained is interesting in that cross or that overlap between Shabbat and Yom Tov. So as we mentioned, Shabbat has those two aspects. The aspect that it is Shabbat Breshit, but it's also, as we say in Kiddush, Tchila the Mikra'i Kodesh. It's the beginning of the Mikra'i Kodesh, not only literally. In Parshat Emor, Shabbat is the first of the Mikra'i Kodesh as mentioned. Rabbi Rav Rosenzweig pointed out, Tchila the Mikra'i Kodesh means it is a paradigm. Shabbat is the paradigmatic Mikra Kodesh. Whenever you want to measure what a Mikra Kodesh is, it's always mentioned or measured against Shabbat. So when you look at Yom Tov, how do we define Yom Tov? We say, well, it's just like Shabbat, but it has a Heter Ochel Nefesh. I mean, that becomes the paradigm or the paradigmatic type of Mikra Kodesh, and that's why it's called Tchila the Mikra Kodesh. It's exactly for that reason that it's Tchila the Mikra Kodesh, because of that. And then he went on to explain that Ein Ben Shabbat V'Yom Tov Ela Ochel Nefesh Bilvad. Many of the Rishonim are perplexed by the Mishnah because there are many other differences between Shabbat and Yom Tov. Why does the Mishnah focus on Heter Ochel Nefesh Bilvad? So there, the answer might be that Heter Ochel Nefesh is not necessarily the only difference between them, but rather it's the difference that highlights the core differences between Shabbat and Yom Tov. It highlights the difference between Simcha versus Oneg. That's one difference that's very blatant, apparent between them. It also makes a big difference in the halachot of Yom Tov versus Shabbat. It also might highlight the difference of the Isur Melacha with regards to Shabbat and Yom Tov. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein wrote in an article, should live and be well, the Meshech Chochma writes this, that there is really a parallel between, in the Torah, between Shvi'it and Yovel. In this upcoming year is a Shemitah year, so we can speak about Shemitah versus Yovel, Shabbat versus Yom Tov. That in the Torah, Shabbat and Shemitah look very similar. Yom Tov and Yovel look very similar. If you look in the Parshiot of the Torah about Shemitah and Yovel and Parshat Behar, there is a key difference in the way that the Torah presents the Isser Melacha associated with Shemitah and the Isser Melacha associated with the Yovel. When it comes to Shemitah, it keeps saying that there is a Shabbat Haaretz, there's a requirement of Shemitah, and the Shemitah, because it's a Shabbat Haaretz, therefore, there is an Isser Melacha. On the other hand, when it comes to Yovel, the mitzvot of Yovel are presented first, and then only afterwards is it considered to be Kodesh, or Yovel is Kodesh. That difference is very fundamental. When it comes to Shemitah, when it comes to Shabbat, we're going to see this later on in the Masechta, that Shabbat is Kidshu V'Kayma, Shemitah happens no matter what. Every seventh year there is a Shemitah. Every seventh day, there is a Shabbat. The nature of Shabbat, the nature of Shemitah is that it's Kodesh. It's Kodesh, why? Because Hashem rested on the seventh day. Shemitah is Kodesh because the Aretz belongs to Hashem. That's it. It's Kodesh. Because of that, now there's an Isur Melacha. The Isur Melacha, or the restriction against doing work on Shabbat, or doing work on the Shemitah, is fundamental to the Shabbat, fundamental to the Shemitah. That is, it's Kodesh, and therefore one can't do Melacha. Doing Melacha would be in opposition or a chilul of the Kedusha of the Shabbat or the Kedusha of the Shemitah. On the other hand, by Yovel and by Yom Tov, the Isur Melacha is not a derivative of the Kedusha of the Yom. If it was just for the Kedusha of the Yom, there wouldn't be an Isur Melacha. The Isur Melacha on Yom Tov and on Yovel, rather, is what frees the individual to do what they're supposed to do on that day. The reason you don't do Melacha on Yom Tov is not because it's a Yom Kodesh, but because you have to be freed of all your burdens in order to have the Simchat Yom Tov, to do the mitzvot of Yom Tov. So the Isur Melacha is not integral or inherent to the Kedushat Yom Tov. It is a ma'afsher. It's a facilitator of the Yom Tov, a facilitator of the day. And so too by the Yovel. When the Torah presents Yovel, it prevents the mitzvot of blowing the shofar, freeing the slaves, the land goes back, and then it says it's Kodesh. The mitzvot of Yovel are what make it Kodesh. It is not the fact that it's Yovel that it is automatically Kodesh. Like today, where we count Shemitot and we don't count Yovelot, Yovel doesn't happen because we don't initiate the mitzvot, we don't declare Yovel. Same thing with Yom Tov. Yom Tov is dependent on Klai Yisrael, Mekadesh Yisrael, Ve'azmanim. We are the ones who determine the day. For instance, Shabbat would be Kodesh, even if we didn't have any Yisrael Malacha. Yom Tov is a regular weekday. If it were not for what we did on Yom Tov would not be a day of Kedushah, because it is a regular weekday. What transforms it into Kedushah is our being Mekadesh the Yom, are doing things that are particular to that day, whether it's the Kiddush HaChodesh, whether it's the Mitzvot HaYom, whether it's the Yisur Melacha that facilitates that, that's what generates the Kedusha. Therefore, if one does Melacha on Shabbat, that would be a Chilul HaShabbat. Doing Melacha on Yom Tov, well, we call it Chilul Yom Tov, it may not be a Chilul of Yom Tov, because Yom Tov doesn't have an inherent Kedusha, that it's Mechalel, the Yom Tov. The Yom Tov is there because of the Mitzvot HaYom Kedusha that is generated by the other items. The Yisur Melacha is just a facilitator. That difference creates a fundamental, a core distinction between Shabbat and Yom Tov, and can explain Ein Ben Shabbat Yom Tov El Ochel Nefesh Bilvad. Ochel Nefesh is that key element that tells you what the difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov is. The Yisur Melacha and Shabbat is all-encompassing because it's Zecher L'Maseh Bereishit. Maseh Bereishit, God rested, therefore you must rest. Whereas Yom Tov, the reason that you're desisting from Melacha has nothing to do with God resting. That's due to the fact that you have a lot to do, that you have to focus your attention on what is important on Yom Tov, therefore don't do Melacha. And that's why there's Heter Ochel Nefesh associated with the Yom Tov. So anyway, that's a key element or differences that we'll notice throughout the Masechta between Shabbat and Yom Tov, something to keep in mind. The second introduction deals with Mukseh. We mentioned this, we've seen it in Shabbat, we've seen it in Erevin a little bit, but the concept of Mukseh. Mukseh, as we mentioned at the end of Sukkah, comes from the word Mukseh that was used for a place where they used to dry the fruits. It's the reason that they call it Mukseh is because once you put the fruits there, you forget about them. They leave them there the entire summer to dry out. Mukseh means they're out of your mind. They're not within your purview. Now, when it comes to Mukseh on Shabbat and Yom Tov, you have to ask the question in each instance is, what is the default status of the item? In every case, is the default status of an item to be within your purview, or is the default status of the item to be outside of your purview? That will make a difference in terms of the din of Mukseh with regards to that item on Shabbat and Yom Tov. Because if it's normally within your purview, then the default of that item will be not to be Mukseh. And you would have to do something that would change that status in order to make it Mukseh. For instance, food. Items that are food on Shabbat and Yom Tov are things that you normally would utilize on Shabbat and Yom Tov. We would not put them outside of your purview on those days, and therefore they're within your world of Shabbat and Yom Tov, and they won't be Mukseh. You could do something to them, for instance, putting them out to dry on the roof, that will make them Mukseh because you pushed them out of your mind. On the other hand, there are items that are, by definition, Mukseh, because you wouldn't engage with them on Shabbat. They're outside of your purview. Whether that's rocks, stones, items outside on the ground that are not within your world on Shabbat, or whether that's items that are very expensive. For instance, a camera that you wouldn't use except for the particular need to take a picture, or, for instance, Nolad, something that didn't exist when you entered into Shabbat and Yom Tov. Those items are not within your world or your purview when it comes to Shabbat and Yom Tov. Therefore, their default status will be Mukseh unless you engage the items. You'll have to engage the items beforehand in order to bring them into the world of Shabbat and Yom Tov. So that is an important question anytime you're dealing with Mukseh, is first and foremost, what is the default status of the item? And then secondarily is, what is your interaction with that item? Once you've defined what the default status is, how have you interacted with this item that might change that default status or reaffirm the default status of that item? All right, so with that we begin Masechet Beitza. Beitza shenolda b'yom tov. Beitza that was born on Yom Tov. Beit Shemai omrim te'achel, you can eat it. Beit Hillel omrim lo te'achel, you may not eat it. Tosfot over here discusses why the Mishnah uses the term te'achel and lo te'achel instead of asur and mutar. We're going to see later on in the Masechta that there is a possibility of differentiating within Mukseh between isur achila and isur tiltol. Mukseh, in its strongest form, includes not only that you can't eat it, but you also cannot touch it. You cannot engage with it whatsoever. So Tosfam notes that later on in the Masechta there is that definition or differentiation, and therefore one could be asur b'achila, but still mutar to engage in it. He rejects that here and says here that even the te'achel and lo te'achel is asur legamri, even in tiltol, because the Gemara will mention that later on in Daf Dalet, that it's asur le'teltel over here. But Beit Shammai is the one who says te'achel, which tells you that it's completely mutar, Therefore, Beit Hillel responded with Lo Te'achel, even though according to Beit Hillel, it's Asur, which is that you can't eat it, but you also can't touch it, you can't be metaltel it. Beit Shammai Omrim, we have another series of machlokot that have nothing to do with the first machloket, except they're all cases that deal with Yom Tov, and Beit Shammai is the Mekula. So that's why they're brought together. Again, when you're learning things by heart, it's easier to categorize items together because they're easier to remember. So these are all situations that deal with Yom Tov, and an instance where Beit Shammai is Mekil. The first of these is the Beit Shenolda B'Yom Tov. The second one is Seor, which is the leavening agent on Pesach, B'Kezayit. The Isser is with the Kezayit. V'Chametz. The Isser Chametz is B'Kekotevet, the size of a date. Beit Hillel Omrim, ze v'ze b'kezayit. Beit Hillel, on the other hand, says that the Isser, the threshold for Isser in both of these items is the kezayit. Gemara will explain why or where their limud is from. We already saw this in Yoma and in Pesachim as well. We discussed this before. But here, Beit Hillel is the Chumrah, that both of them have a threshold of a kezayit in order to be in violation of Seor or Chametz. Hashochet, Chaya v'of b'yom tov. Someone who shechs a chayan of on Yom Tov, which is permissible. The problem is that a chayan of require kisui hadam. Unlike a behemah, behemah does not require kisui hadam. There is a requirement of kisui hadam for chayav of. So Beit Shammai omrim, yachpor b'deker v'chaseh, that he should dig with the spade into the ground and cover it up. He does the kisui hadam. We'll discuss exactly how he does that and not in violation of Yom Tov. Beit Hillel omrim, lo yishkot, elim ken haya lo afar muchan mibol yom. Should not shech unless he has dirt that is designated specifically for kisui adam prior to Yom Tov. Here's a good example of something which the default status of dirt is mukse. That's not in your worldview or your purview on Yom Tov or Shabbat. So Beit Hillel says you have to pre-designate it in order that it has relevance to the day of Shabbat or the day of Yom Tov. Here it's Yom Tov, Shabbat, you don't shech. So on Yom Tov, to have it relevance, you have to have engaged it beforehand. Modim. Everybody agrees, shim shachat. If he already was shochet, sheyachpor bedeker v'yichaseh, he should dig with the spade and cover it, she'efer kira muchanhu, because we have something that you can use, which is the ashes that are found inside of the stove. Those ashes are muchanhu, because you're allowed to bake, you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov, and so the ashes that are generated are a part of your world on Yom Tov, and since they're muchanhu, you can use those ashes to do the kisui hadam. Again, all of this will be discussed in the Gemara. The Gemara wants to know what exactly is the case here. We're going to spend the entirety of today's daf discussing Beit Shenolda B'Yom Tov. What is the scenario that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argue about over here? So that's what the Gemara asks right away. B'mai Askinan, what is the case here? Ilema b'tarnegolet ha'omedet achila. We're talking about a chicken whose designation is to be eaten. Chicken can have two designations. It can have a designation to be eaten, or it can have a designation to lay eggs. So now, if it's designated to be eaten, then it's in your worldview or purview on Yom Tov because you can eat it and you're allowed to shecht, you're allowed to make it on Yom Tov. So then it wouldn't be mukse. On the other hand, if its purpose is to lay eggs, then on Yom Tov, that chicken is not within your purview because you wouldn't have eaten it. There's nothing you're going to do with this chicken on Yom Tov that is relevant to you. You'll take its eggs, but you won't. The chicken itself, you won't engage with because it's mukse. It's outside of your world of Yom Tov because you never intended to engage with it on Yom Tov. So now, if that's the case, that it's a tarnagolot omedet le'achila, which means that it is not mukse, then ma'itamayu de Beit Hillel. Why is Beit Hillel say the egg is a problem? Uchla difratu. It's just a piece of food that basically separates away, falls away from the main piece of food. The egg is just an extension of the chicken. So when it lays the egg, it's as if you pulled a piece of food, a piece of chicken, away from the chicken. Obviously not literally, but figuratively, you're taking a piece away. If the chicken isn't muksa, then the egg itself shouldn't be muksa as well. So why would Beit Hillel restrict it? Now, the assumption of the Gemara is not so simple, because later on in Daf Gimel, tomorrow's Daf, there is a Tano that doesn't think Uchla Difrat works. But as of right now, the Gemara takes it for a given that everybody agrees that if food separates from food, then it's the same entity. Ella b'tarnegolet omedet legadel beitzim. If you're talking about a chicken whose designation is to lay eggs, then it's mukse. Now, if you apply the same principle, which is that the egg is an extension of the chicken, at that point in time, ma'itamayu de Beit Shammai. What's the reasoning behind Beit Shammai? Mukse. The egg will be mukse just like the chicken itself is mukse. So my says, my kushya. Why is that a problem? Doma Beit Shammai late lehu muksa. Maybe Beit Shammai does not hold of muksa. Maybe they do not subscribe to the concept of muksa. Kasak datlin afilu man deshori b'muksa benulad asur. Gemara says because we assume that even the person who says that muksa it doesn't exist, there is no such concept of muksa on Shabbat and Yom Tov. Nevertheless, they agree with the fact that if it's nolad, if it suddenly appears on Shabbat and Yom Tov, that it does have a din of muksa. This comes out, it'll come up throughout our Masechta. It is a machloket in the Gemara itself, as well as by the Rishonim, people like Rabbi Shimon, who we're going to see in a second, who do not subscribe to muksa, who don't think there's a concept of muksa. How far does that go? Does that mean they don't have any concept of muksa whatsoever? Or there are more extreme forms of muksa that they will subscribe to. They don't think that normal items, things like oil that is in a candle, once the candle blows out, you can use that oil. That's not muksa because the person waits and he will use that oil. On the other hand, when something is so far-fetched, like nolad, something that didn't exist in the world coming into Shabbat, even they will agree that that's muksa because you couldn't have your mind, you couldn't have that within your world of Shabbat or Yom Tov because it just didn't exist. So because of that, maybe they would agree that there is a concept of muksa in those extreme cases. The question always being asked is, which extreme case and how extreme, for those that don't hold a muksa, will they hold a muksa? When will it kick in for them? It's a possibility it'll never kick in, or it's a possibility that it kicks in at certain levels. Nolad is one of those key areas where, according to many, muksa kicks in even for those that don't hold a muksa. So that's what the Gemara suggests over here. Even if Beit Shammai doesn't hold a muksa, they ascribe to Rabbi Shimon's position, nevertheless, they still would have a problem here because it's nolad. The egg didn't exist before. Shabbat didn't exist before Yom Tov. Now it's muksa because it came into the world on that day. So, my tamayu de Beit Shammai. Kasaka then afil man deshari muksa nolad asar, my tamayu de Beit Shammai. Then, if that's the case, what is the reason behind Beit Shammai? If they think that nolad is muksa, then why are they permitting you to eat the egg? So, Amar of Nachman, here's our first attempt at an answer. Deolam betarnagola tomedet the gadel beitzim. Talking about a case of a chicken that is designated for laying eggs, which means that it's muksa. Vid itle muksa, itle nolad. Whoever has the din of muksa also has a din of nolad. The itle muksa, itle nolad. So here you have a suggestion by Rav Nachman Yitzchak, the two are correlated. That if you don't think there's muksa, you also don't think there's nolad. If you think there is muksa, you do think there is nolad. So the one way to undermine what we just suggested in the Beit Shammai's position, the Gemara says, kasakadatin. We assumed that even if you thought muksa was mutar, then nolad was asur. The answer to Rav Nachman Yitzchak is, that's not right. Nolad and muksa are correlated. So there's no muksa, there's no nolad. There is muksa, there is nolad. So Beit Shammai ki Rabbi Shimon. Beit Shammai subscribes to Rabbi Shimon's position who holds there's no muksa. Beit Hillel ki Rabbi Yehuda. And Beit Hillel subscribes to Rabbi Yehuda's position which is muksa. Now as Tosafot points out that even according to the position here that there is no nolad by muksa, they'll have different levels of nolad. Nolad actually comes in different manifestations. If a person can see something, then they won't put it out of their purview. If they can see it, then it's within their world. So here, if you have something like nolad, nolad can come from something that exists in front of you, and nolad can be something from shelo ba'al le'olam, that doesn't exist at all. So for instance, if you have a fruit on a tree that falls off on Shabbat or Yom Tov, it was there the whole time, and it just, you needed it to detach in order for you to engage with it. Or, for instance, a plate that breaks. Plate that breaks on Yom Tov or breaks on Shabbat, the shards that come away from it, they are nolad, because they were not shards before Yom Tov, but there was a plate there. When you came into Yom Tov, the plate existed, it was just one piece instead of shards. So that type of nolad, maybe that's not muksa. Or, there's a middle category of nolad, which is the laying of an egg. Over here, where the chicken exists, the egg is going to come out pretty regularly, they come out every day, so you assume that it's coming, it's within your worldview. On the other hand, rain. That comes. There were no clouds here. Suddenly, in a Yom Tov, all these clouds gather and rain comes. That might be a nolad that's even on a higher form or more chamur because not only was it nolad, it came on Yom Tov, but shelo ba'al le'olam. It didn't exist at all prior to Yom Tov. All of a sudden now you have water that shows up on Yom Tov that comes from the rain. That's something that wasn't even in your world purview because you couldn't even see that the clouds were coming. Maybe if the clouds were there, maybe we'd have a different view of that. So nolad can actually come in different forms. And it might be, even if you say here that nolad is not muksa, there might be types of nolad where you agree it is muksa, where like things like davar shelo ba le'olam. Right, so now the Gemara challenges this and says, Mi amar Rav Nachman hochi. Does Rav Nachman really think this way? That's nine. We have a Mishnah at the end of Shabbat. It's Shemai Omrim, Magbim Yala Shukhalan, Atzamot Viklipim. Person can take off the table bones and shells. These are things that are useless afterwards. Rashi claims that they're Ein Ra'ui La'Achila, implying that they're not Ra'ui for an Adam and not Ra'ui for an animal. On the other hand, Tosafot says that he doesn't think that's right. He thinks that the issue over here is that they're not Ra'ui La'Adam, but they are Ra'ui to animals, because otherwise you'll end up with a basis the davar asur, which will create you a bigger problem. Although in the end, he argues that maybe it's a basis the davar asur and mutar, and then it wouldn't be such a big deal. But the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with the Rashi and says these are ra'uyim le'achilat behema. Beit Hillel omrim, misalekat ha'tavla kula umin ara. So Beit Shammai says when you have these items on your table, you just pick them up and take them to the garbage. You can pick them up, not a problem. Beit Hillel says no, you can't pick them up directly. You can only move them indirectly. How do you move them indirectly? You shake the table, and then they fall off. V'amar of Nachman, Anu ein lanu ele Beit Shammai k'Rabbi Yehuda, Beit Hillel k'Rabbi Shimon. Nachman says that I have a mesorah from my Rabbonim, that this Mishnah is incorrect, that the opinions of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are reversed. Because Beit Shammai holds like Rabbi Yehuda, that there is a din of mukseh, and Beit Hillel holds like Rabbi Shimon, that there is no din of mukseh. So their positions are reversed, but that also be the reverse of what Rav Nachman just suggested over here. Rav Nachman just suggested over here that Beit Shammai says that you can eat the egg because they hold like Rabbi Shimon. So why over there does he say Beit Shammai holds like Rabbi Yehuda? So Amar Lacha Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, I'll explain it to you. Gabe Shabbat, when it comes to Shabbat, the Stam Lantana ke Rabbi Shimon, the Stam Mishnayot that are found in Shabbat, follow the position of Rabbi Shimon that there is no mukseh. For instance, the Tanan, we have a Mishnah. You're allowed to cut up gourds in front of the animals, and you're allowed to cut up a carcass of an animal before the dogs to eat. Now, in terms of nevela lifnei haklavim, that's the proof. Nevela, when you're coming into Shabbat, when the animal was still alive, the animal is still alive coming into Shabbat, you do not have in mind to feed it to the dogs or to make it into dog food. The animal dies on Shabbat, or on Yom Tov, it becomes a nevela on Shabbat and Yom Tov, that's a change in its status, and now it became dog food on Shabbat and Yom Tov. So there it would have been mukseh, because coming into Shabbat, you would not have had your focus on this animal, would not have been within your purview coming in. So the default status of the animal when it's alive is to be mukseh. So now, all of a sudden that it dies on Shabbat, now you have a nevela. You want to feed it to the dogs, it's mukseh, you can't do that. But what do we have here? We have a Stam Mishnah that says you can cut up the nevela before the klavim, even on Shabbat, even if it died on Shabbat. So there's a proof that you have a Stam Mishnah that says there's no problem with mukseh, like Rabbi Shimon. Now, Michatchim et Duruim, both according to Rashi and Tosafot, is for a different reason, but they have different reasons why it's a different reason. Rashi says, Michatchim et Duruim is a tircha shelo letzorech. You're cutting them up so the animals can eat them. It's easier for your animals to eat them. It's not necessary. Duruim, they can eat them themselves, even if you cut them in gross cuts. Even if you don't slice them into smaller pieces. The animals can eat them, you're just making it easier for them to eat. So that's a tircha shelo letzorech. It's an exertion that's not necessary or not required, and therefore it's not permitted on Shabbat. That's why Rashi says there's a problem of mechatchim et duluim. Tosafot says the problem of mechatchim et duluim is that you're making it into ochel. It was inedible beforehand because the gourds are too hard. When you cut it into smaller pieces, the animals are able to chew it and make it softer and eat it. So the cutting of the duluim makes it into ochel, so there's a tikkun in the ochel on Shabbat. So the problem of mechatchim duluim is not connected to our Gemara, why it's brought here. According to Rashi, it's because it's tircha shelo letzorech. The Tosafot, it's a problem because you're making it into ochel. The second piece of the Mishnah is what's relevant here is that you're in a velo, you're allowed to cut up for the dogs, even though it died on Shabbat. So if that's the case, you see there's Stam Mishnah in Shabbat says, no problem, a mukseh. So because that's the case, mukim la de Beit Hillel k'Rabbi Shimon. Therefore, in Shabbat, we assume that Beit Hillel's position is in accord with Rabbi Shimon, because halacha ke Beit Hillel. So you want the halacha to follow whoever the Stam Mishnah is like in that Masechta. So the Stam Mishnah in Shabbat follows Rabbi Shimon, we're going to put it together with Beit Hillel because Beit Hillel is the halacha. So we'll keep the Stam Mishnah, which we know is halacha ke Stam Mishnah, and Beit Hillel, halacha ke Beit Hillel. We're going to align those, so then you have a consonance between those two piskei halacha, between halacha ke Stam Mishnah and halacha ke Beit Hillel. Aval, gabe yom tov, the Stam Lantana K'Rabbi Yehuda, by Yom Tov, in Masechet Yom Tov, in Beitza, the Stam Mishnah follows Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanan. We have a Mishnah upcoming. Im Vakim Itzim Min HaKorot, V'lo min ha-korash nishbira b'yom tov. Person cannot chop up wood to use for the fire, or chop up wood for cooking on Yom Tov from the korot. The korot are the piles of beams that are construction beams. They were set aside there. There were spacers stacked up together. Those beams are designated for beef for construction. Their default status is mukzah, unless you specifically designate them to be utilized on Yom Tov. Otherwise, the default is mukzah because they're expensive. They were designated for use in terms of construction, and therefore you cannot chop them up on Yom Tov to use for firewood. Korash and Ishbara, you have in your house a beam that breaks. Now, coming into Yom Tov, maybe the beam looked a little weak, and maybe it would have fallen down. So there's a possibility, as opposed to the boards by construction boards, where there might be a problem with kis on kis, it might be mukso de gamrin, there's no heter at all. Over here, you have maybe a machloket Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda with regards to the beam. When it comes to that beam, when it falls down on Yom Tov, can you use it now? The beam fell down. It's no longer a part of the building anymore. Can now you utilize it for your firewood? So the Mishnah here says, "V'lo min ha-korash nishbara b'yom tov." You can't do it because it broke on Yom Tov. It's like a nolad on Yom Tov. So therefore, that case, the Stam Mishnah here in Beitza, it's like Rabbi Yehuda, that there is muksa by a korah. So therefore, mukimla, over here, Rabbi Nachman establishes that the Beit Hillel, Rabbi Yehuda, says the Beit Hillel holds like Rabbi Yehuda, because again, halacha Stam Mishnah, so halacha be that there is muksa by Yom Tov, halacha ke Beit Hillel. So we're going to have Beit Hillel be like Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara asks the obvious question, michtei, man stame lematznitan. Who put together the Stam Mishnah? Where do Stam Mishnayot come from? The Gemara says, Rabbi. Rabbi was the Mesadera Mishnayot. As Rashi says over here, it says a Machloket HaRishonim, and all the way through till modern era, exactly what Rabbi's role was in putting together the Mishnah. What did Rabbi do in putting the Mishnah together? Did he simply take sources and aggregate them? Did he actually write the Mishnayot, create the actual format of the Mishnayot? Did he simply put them into an organized fashion? There's a machloket, and you see here, Rashi will give you some sense of what he thinks Rabbi did with the Mishnah. Hu sidera Mishnah, that's what Rashi says. Ukishra'a divrei chacham. When he thought the loch was like one of the chachamim, v'yashru be'inav, and that was what he thought should be the psak halacha, shan'an stam. He changed the attribution. So one of the roles that Rabbi had in putting together the Mishnah is that he altered the attribution. In cases where we knew the attribution, he, instead of giving attribution, eliminated the attribution because it changed it from a dat yachid into what looks like rabim. He made it the default line of the Mishnah or the Stam Mishnah. So that's one of the important roles Rabbi had in determining halacha or establishing the Mishnah, was that in cases where he thought the halacha was correct or like that individual, he took away the attribution and made it look like that was the majority opinion. And he didn't mention who said them because he didn't want it to be from Yachid. So it makes it look as if it comes from the Rabbim and they will do it in that manner. So one of the roles of Rabbi and Seder HaMishnah is this changing of attribution in order to facilitate a certain outcome in halacha. So now the Gemara says, okay, Rabbi is the Mesader HaMishnayot. Why is it that in Shabbat he made all the Stam Mishnayot like Rabbi Shimon, that there is no Muksa? And then why does he create the Stam Mishnah in Beitza like Rabbi Yehuda? I mean, if you're talking about two different authors or two different codifiers, redactors of the Mishnah, then you could argue that they have different opinions. But here, if Rabbi is a singular individual putting together the Mishnayot, why in Shabbat does he think there's no muksa? And in Yom Tov, all of a sudden he does think there's muksa. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda don't make such a distinction. Rabbi Shimon thinks there's no muksa on Shabbat, no muksa on Yom Tov. Rabbi Yehuda thinks there is muksa on Yom Tov and there is muksa on Shabbat. Why is Rabbi picking and choosing between them in these instances? Where it says, Imre, Shabbat di chamiro, Shabbat which is more chamur. That's what we spoke about in the introduction. Lo ate lezuzule ba. People are not going to come to denigrate it because they understand the severity of Shabbat. Therefore, satam lan ke Rabbi Shimon de Mekil. Therefore, he said muksa was not necessary to protect the integrity of Shabbat, and therefore, stam mishnah Rabbi Shimon that there is no muksa. Yom Tov de Kiel. On the other hand, Yom Tov, which is more lenient, which again, when it goes to our introduction, the leniency of Malacha on Yom Tov, where does it derive from? And why is there a leniency? But there is a leniency, and we know people can cook on Yom Tov. Once you do that, Ate lizulzulei bei. People are going to come to denigrate Yom Tov because they think it's not as important, it's not as severe as Shabbat. So therefore, in order to protect Yom Tov, satan lang Rabbi Yehuda de machmir. Therefore, the Stam Mishnah went like Rabbi Yehuda that there is muksa when it comes to Yom Tov. So it's actually counterintuitive in a sense. Shabbat, which is more severe, no muksa. Yom Tov, which is more lenient, there is muksa. The reason it's counterintuitive is because you would have thought it aligns. The reason it doesn't align is for exactly that reason, because muksa is a protective cover over Shabbat and Yom Tov. Shabbat doesn't require that protection because of its severity. And then Yom Tov, because you are making in one instance, we have to be machmir in the other instance in order to protect the integrity of Yom Tov. So that's the way we solve the problem of the stira in Rav Nachman's statement. And Rav Nachman now establishes our Mishnah as a case of a chicken that is there to lay eggs. So it's muksa. And Beit Shammai says you can eat it because they don't hold of muksa. Beit Hillel says you cannot eat it because they do hold of muksa. But mayu kimto. So Gemara says, okay, what did you say here? Betana goto meder te gadel beitzim. Talking about a chicken that is designated to lay eggs. Shumuksa. Hiochi. If that's the case, ad the mifelge vebeitza. If you're going to argue about the egg, palgu betana golet. Argue about the chicken itself. Why do you have to get to the egg? The chicken itself is the same machloket. If the machloket is about muksa, the chicken's muksa because it was designated to lay eggs. Beit Shammai says no muksa. Beit Hillel says yes muksa. The argument could be you want to shek this chicken to eat it? You could have the same argument about the chicken as you have about the egg. So lo diacha kochan de Beit Shammai dibinolad shori. Teach you how powerful the position of Beit Shammai is, that not only do they say that muksa is mutar on Yom Tov, they say no lad is mutar on Yom Tov. The egg that wasn't there before now shows up. Even that they say is not muksa. So when it says, why don't they argue about the chicken to tell you how machmir Beit Hillel is that the muksa asre, that they say that's muksa and you can't eat it. Mar says, what do you suggest here? Why would I pick emphasizing Beit Shammai's position over Beit Hillel's position? Because koach de hetera odif, the power of the one who's lenient, we give preferential treatment to. Rashi says something so important over here. Tov lo lashmenu koach divrei amatir. It's worthwhile for us to focus on the one who is matir, shehu sumecha shmuato, because he relies on his mesora, ve'enu yarei lahatir, and he's not afraid to be lenient. Av koach osrim enu raya. When you are machmir, and when you're oser, you have no proof. Shakol yucholim lachmir. Anybody can be a machmir. You don't have to be a genius to be a machmir. You can always say it's asur, even when it's mutar. Vafilu davara mutar. So he says, there's no evidence. When somebody says something is asur, there is no evidence that they are doing something that's halachic or making a halachic decision. They're simply being machmir. So there's nothing that comes out of that that is a chiddush. On the other hand, it's out of that matir, that person is going against what might be the logic or might be the easier route. And because of that, we have to give preferential treatment to the matir and emphasize the tzad aheter. So the Gemara says, v'chi tema, if you want to suggest, that's why we focused on the beitza, v'niflog v'tarvayu. Just put both of them in the Mishnah. It's not so hard to do that. As Tosafot points out, Gemara doesn't ask this in other places when we say koach de'etera odif. That's because in other places, to bring in two machlokot would have been very difficult. Over here, it's very simple. Just say, tarnagolet homedet degaldo beitzim, hi ubeitzata. I mean, you just have to add in one word and you have the both machlokot covered. Just hi. Hi ubeitzata, beit shamei omrim te'achel. Both the chicken and the egg can be eaten according to Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel omrim lo te'achel. You can't eat in either of them. You can't eat the egg. You can't eat the chicken.
We have this lo te'achel kol the egg all over the job.
Right.
They never say that.
Right. So that's what Tosafot says. Because here it was very easy to incorporate both of them. The Mishnah, you wouldn't have to done very much to incorporate them. In other places in Shas where they ask that, usually the other case is more complex. It's not just adding one word into the Mishnah and all of a sudden it's found here. Here, adding the word he would change the whole dynamic of the Mishnah and you get both cases in. So Tosafot differentiates in that way that this is a very easy way to get it in, and other places in Shas would be much harder to get it in. And that's why the Gemara doesn't present the question in that way. So that's the position of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman's position is challenged because of this issue of why they did not mention also the chicken and not just the egg in the Mishnah. Ella Amar Rabba. Now we have a second suggestion as to what the machloke between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is in the Mishnah. Le'olam b'tarnagolet omedet la'achila. Talking about a chicken whose designation is for eating. Over Yom Tov shechaliot achara Shabbat askinen. And the case here is a Yom Tov after Shabbat. Now, whether that's the case in our Mishnah or whether there's a gezeira on every Yom Tov because of that. We'll see in a second. So it's not necessarily that this is the case of our Mishnah, but there is a case where it's a problem, which is where Yom Tov is on Sunday. Umishum halchana. Because the problem of halchana, kasav rabba, ko beitza de yalda yindom. Any egg that's given birth to today, laid today, me'etmol gamrala, was completed the day before, bidei shamayim, v'rabo the tamei, and rabo is the shitato, we saw this in Pesachim, we're going to see it again later in the Masechta, this has huge implications in terms of Eruv Tavshilin, which is the Amar Rabo, my dichtiv, what is meant in the Pasuk, v'yab v'yom ha-shishi, v'yechinu et asher yaviu. On the sixth day, they must prepare everything that they need on Shabbat. Chol mechin the Shabbat, v'chol mechil the Yom Tov. Chol can prepare for Shabbat, and Chol can prepare for Yom Tov. V'ein Yom Tov mechin the Shabbat, but Yom Tov can't be preparation for Shabbat, v'ein Shabbat mechin the Yom Tov. And Shabbat cannot prepare for Yom Tov. A Rabbah's position is a very interesting position. Rashi over here says something that most of the Rishonim disagree with. He says Rabbah believes Muksa is Deoraita. He thinks that Muksa is a din min ha-Torah that we learn out of this pasuk. As Rashi points out, if we're talking about cooking, if we're talking about baking, that the Torah already explicitly mentions over there. It says, asher tofu eifu, but asher tofashu bashelu. Whatever you have to bake or cook, you have to do beforehand. So that's clearly not what the pasuk that we brought is talking about. It must be talking about something else. And what Rashi says, it's talking about hachana bepeh, making or designating things to be mutar, to utilize on Shabbat and utilize on Yom Tov. And what Rashi explains is that Shabbat and Yom Tov are significant days. Since they are significant days, their meals are chashuvim. And since their meals are chashuvim, the Torah says over here that the preparation of those meals must be done beforehand on the weekday. Must be that you prepare the Shabbat meals on a weekday. Must be that you prepare the Yom Tov meals on a weekday. The hachana must be done beforehand because of the significance of the meals. What Rashi notes over here is that we don't worry about the fact that an egg laid on Sunday was finished on Shabbat. We don't say, oh, Shabbat prepared for Chol, because a weekday is not chashuv. It's not chashuv, the meals are not chashuv, and therefore we don't worry about the fact that something was prepared beforehand on a day that was asur. Now obviously, if you physically prepared it, then you have a problem because you're doing melacha. But here we're talking about things that are done bidei shamayim. The egg, the completion of the egg is not in human hands. That's bidei shamayim. So normally we wouldn't worry about things that are bidei shamayim, but because of the significance of the meals of Shabbat and Yom Tov, we demand that things that are even finished bidei shamayim be done prior to Shabbat, prior to Yom Tov. So in a normal case of Shabbat and Yom Tov, you wouldn't have a problem. The egg that's laid today was already finished on Friday. So it was done. Everything was completed beforehand. Problem comes in and out when you have adjacent days of Shabbat and Yom Tov. Doesn't matter which way, whether it's Yom Tov or Shabbat, Shabbat or Yom Tov. In that case, when the chicken lays the egg on the second day of those, then when it lays the egg, the day before it was completed. And it was completed on a Shabbat or completed on a Yom Tov. And because of that, Chana de Rabba, Rabba says no good, because it was done bidei shamayim, but it wasn't done on a weekday. Therefore, Shabbat or Yom Tov prepared for the other one, and that is not permissible. That's the way Rashi explains this concept of Hachono de Rabba, that Muksa is the Oraita. Many of the other Rishonim believe that Muksa is only the Rabbanan, even according to Rabba. Rabba's focus is not on Muksa, but rather on Hachono, on this issue of preparation or getting ready. Tosafot asks the obvious question here, if Rabba believes that Hachono from Yom Tov to Shabbos is impermissible, then how does Erev Tavshilin work? Because Erev Tavshilin is only institution de Rabbanan. And here, Hachana de Rabba is a din d'oraita. So how is it that we're cooking on Yom Tov for Shabbat? The answer is that Rabba's opinion is that you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov because of Hoil. Hoil is that maybe Hoil Mikle Orchim, that guests might come. So therefore, since it's permitted to be cooked on Yom Tov, when it's cooked, it was cooked for Yom Tov, not for Shabbat. It wasn't a preparation of Shabbat. And when it was done for Yom Tov. Okay, it happens to be leftovers now and using on Shabbat. That's fine. But the preparations were not done for Shabbat. They were done for Yom Tov itself, and that's why it's not a problem. And therefore, you're now back down to a din de rabbona. Now, the question in all these cases you have to ask is, why is it that it's asur to prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbat or from Shabbat to Yom Tov? There's two possibilities. It's a big chakira in Erev Tavshilin. Later on, we'll get to it in the Masechta when we deal with this. We spoke about it in Pesachim as well. But is it because on Yom Tov, we don't want you cooking for Shabbat because we want to protect Yom Tov? We're trying to protect Yom Tov. We don't want you to denigrate Yom Tov and do all your preparations for Shabbat and Yom Tov, and you're ruining Yom Tov. So we tell you prepare beforehand, because otherwise you're going to do all your preparations in Yom Tov, and you're going to ruin Yom Tov in preparations for Shabbat. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that it's because the significance of Shabbat itself. We don't want you to prepare on Yom Tov because you're going to end up skimping for Shabbat. If you prepare ahead of time, then you'll do a full preparation. You'll have what you need for Shabbat. On the other hand, if we do it on Yom Tov, you're going to start skimping. You're going to use some of your Yom Tov. You won't use it for Shabbat. And you're going to end up not preparing full-heartedly for Shabbat. So the question of the Isser preparation from Yom Tov to Shabbat, is it because of Yom Tov or is it because of Shabbat? Over here, Rashi seems to indicate that the preparations over here are for Shabbat itself. That the problem is that the meal on Shabbat requires a proper preparation on a Yom Chol. And because of the significance of the meal of Shabbat, it requires a Chol. It's not the problem that it's Yom Tov itself. It's not the problem that you're doing something wrong on Yom Tov, or you're denigrating Yom Tov in some way by preparing for Shabbat. The problem is Shabbat itself. Shabbat itself requires preparation to be done on Chol.
Is that limit from the Pasuk Bayom HaShishi, that's...
Yeah, so Bayom HaShishi, Rashi says that HaShishi, the normal sixth day, is a Chol, a weekday. And therefore, we're always talking about Chol, and that is the default day that you would prepare for Shabbat and prepare for Yom Tov. Here is where Rashi says what I mentioned in the introduction, that Yom Tov is Hari Shabbat. Therefore, when it says Vechinu Desher Yaviu, it applies to Yom Tov equally as Shabbat. You need a Chol to prepare for Yom Tov, and you need Chol to prepare for Shabbat. And that's why Ba'ach Shavar Rachman al-Sudat Shabbat, she has minenu mi ba'od yom. Torah gives so much significance to the meal of Shabbat that it has to be prepared beforehand on a weekday. And therefore, our problem here is that we're worried about Shabbat, not worried about Yom Tov in terms of preparing on Yom Tov, according to the way Rashi formulates it over here. Now, Tosafot asks a question which Rashi takes for granted, that Yom Tov ikre Shabbat, and they have the same din over here. Tosafot says that it's not so clear that, with regards to the mon, that when it came to a Yom Tov, that they had double man on Erev Yom Tov. He says it happens to be a machloket ha-midrashim as to whether, just like on Shabbat, they got double man on Erev Shabbat, I know Erev Yom Tov, they got double man. Obviously, this has implications in terms of Hachana Derabba, as well as implications for Lechem Mishneh. Whether there's a requirement of Lechem Mishneh on Yom Tov, that would depend on whether the man came on Erev Yom Tov double, or it fell on Yom Tov itself. Tosafot over here says it's a machloket ha-midrashim. The halacha, we are choshesh for the midrash that says it did fall, and we have lechem mishneh on Yom Tov. But it's clear that lechem mishneh on Yom Tov is not like lechem mishneh on Shabbat. We do today, we make them equal, and we have lechem mishneh on both. But it's clear on Shabbat, lechem mishneh is very significant, because the man definitely fell double on Friday. On Yom Tov, it's not clear that it fell double, and therefore we do have lechem mishneh, because to be choshesh for that side, but it's not necessarily muskam lakol, that it was double man on Yom Tov. According to you, Rabbah, the whole problem here is when there's an adjacency between Yom Tov and Shabbat. So why are you oser on a regular Yom Tov, a beitza that was no lot? That was finished on Friday. That's the case. It shouldn't be a problem whatsoever. So gzeira mishum Yom Tov achar Shabbat. So gzeira, because when Yom Tov falls out after Shabbat, so we make a gzeira for all of them. So Gemara says Shabbat to alma tishtare. What about Shabbat in general? Shabbat in general, if your egg is blade on Shabbat, it was finished on Friday, which should be totally fine. Gzeira mishum Shabbat achar Yom Tov. So that's also a gzeira that we make, that when Shabbat comes after or succeeds Yom Tov, then we also have it. It's adjacency in either direction because you need a Yom Chol to prepare. So Shabbat, we're not going to let you eat the eggs on Shabbat because there might be a case where Shabbat comes after Yom Tov. We're not going to let you eat the eggs on Yom Tov because there might be a Yom Tov that comes after Shabbat. Umiga zrina. Do we really impose such a gzeira of auto adjacency of Shabbat and Yom Tov? Atanya, we have a brayta. Shocheta the tarnagolet matzah ba-beitzim. Someone checks the tarnagolet and finds eggs embedded in it, gmurot, that are finished. Bleated eggs inside of it after they shecht it. Mutarot ochlam be-yom tov. You're allowed to eat them on Yom Tov. So Vagmar says, if you're right, ligzor mishum hanach demiyaldon be-yomen. Why don't you make a gzeira for those that are born on that day? Eggs that are born on that day are asurim. So why, when you check the chicken and you find whole eggs in there, are you allowed to eat them? Ella, beitzim gmurot meiman milta de lo shchichai. That's not a question. Because you're right, you should have been gozer, but it's not a common item. Umilta de lo shchichai lo gozru ba'banon. This is a big principle in gzerot rabbanan. Gzerot rabbanan only apply to common items, things that you're going to encounter on a regular basis. Things that you're not going to encounter on a regular basis, there is no gzerot rabbanan, because the rabbanan don't address those types of situations or those types of issues. So okay, then you're going to find completed eggs inside of a chicken on a regular Yom Tov, mutar. Just like an egg that was laid on a Yom Tov is mutar. So well, you're going to go there up to a case where Yom Tov comes after Shabbat. The answer is no. Because that's already a gzeira, and you're dealing with a situation. It's almost a double low probability. First of all, it has to be a case where Yom Tov comes after Shabbat, plus you have to shech the chicken and find whole eggs in it. That's a far-fetched case, which Chazal were not gozer for, and that's why there's no gzeira in that case. It might be that you could suggest that if it was a Yom Tov, Achar Shabbat, and you shechted the chicken and found the eggs in there, that they might be asurim according to Rabbah. Tosafot argues no, that they're still mutar, because they never reached the gemar. Since they were not laid, they never reached their final state, and therefore there was no gemar on the previous day that you have to worry about. So that's why Hevi Tosafot says, even according to Rabbah, it would be mutar to eat them on Yom Tov Achar Shabbat. Now we have the final two suggestions as to what the reason behind our Mishnah is, which is, Rav Yosef Amar Gzeira Mishum Perot Anoshrim. Gzeira in our Mishnah is because of fruits that fall off the tree. We know that fruits that fall off the tree on Yom Tov are, and Shabbat are Asurim, they're Muksa, because we're afraid if you allow people to take fruit that fall by themselves, they'll start picking them themselves. What's the reason behind fruits falling off the tree that it's asur? Gzeira shama yale v'yitlosh, because you might go and pick them. He gufa gzeira. It itself is a gzeira. V'ano nikim nigzer gzeira l'gzeira. Now you're going to build another gzeira on top of a gzeira. So Rashi says, the Gemara says in other places, that the principle of establishing gzeirot comes from the concept of putting a shamartam et mishmarti, that you have to put a mishmeret, a guard around my Torah. And the Gemara Darshan's there, asumish merit, the mishmarti, you should make a guard or fence around my mishmeret, which means the Torah, but lo mishmeret, the mishmeret, but not a fence around a fence. You don't make a gzeira to a gzeira, you don't put another fence around already something that's already a fence. The fence is to protect the Torah. So you don't protect the fence from the fence. So that's why you don't do this. So why are you putting a gzeira on top of gzeira? Kula chada gzeira. It's all one gzeira. Chachamim, as Rashi says, had in mind, when they talked about fruits falling off the tree, they also had in mind eggs coming out of a chicken. Now, eggs coming out of a chicken are not exactly the same, because you're not going to be tolish an egg from a chicken. But because of their similarity of coming away from an object, it's a fixed object that produces. The tree produces fruit, and the tree always remains. The chicken produces eggs and always remains. So because of that similarity, they said no eggs on Yom Tov, because it might come to people saying, oh, I can say something that detaches from an object is okay. So I'll also take fruits, and that'll end up with you picking it. It's all part of the original gezerah. All right, then, Rav Yitzchak Amar, Rav Yitzchak makes another suggestion along the same lines, which is gzeira mishema mashkim shizobu. So gzeira because of liquids that emanate from a object on Shabbat. If you have a fruit that leaches liquid on Shabbat, you're not allowed to utilize those liquids, because if you allow you to use those liquids, you might come to tzchita. You might come to doing a squeezing or producing liquids from a solid item. That is not permitted on Shabbat. So we have gzeira of mashkim that come out by themselves, even though technically they should be mutar, because if we allow that, you'll come to squeeze. So Amalei Abai, he asks the same question. Mashkim shizavo time amai. What's the problem? Gzeira shemi yischot. That maybe he will squeeze it out himself. He gufa gzeira, v'anam nikum nigzor gzeira l'gzeira. That's a gzeira. And now you want to add on top of that eggs, which is not part of that gzeira, it's an additional part of gzeira. My answer is again, kula chada gzeirohi. It's all one big gzeira, which is that eggs that emanating from a chicken are similar to liquids emanating from a solid object. So because of that similarity, the Chachamim originally, when they put the gzeira together, incorporated that as part of the gzeira. That eggs coming out of a chicken, since they're similar in this nature, we're going to say don't eat them, because people might come to schita from those objects. Okay, tomorrow we'll delve into that more deeply and then discuss how or why the opinions differ from each other with regards to these reasons. We'll end here.